Hi, welcome to the first Pittsburgh Comics in-store podcast. This is Colin McMahon, owner-operator of Pittsburgh Comics. And we have a group of seven sitting here today to talk about recent events in comics. So we thought this would be a good one to start. This is Wednesday, June 1st. And we figured we'd get going with this. So we're going to start going around to my left, which doesn't mean a whole lot to you on listening to this, but it'll help us. So we'll start with Ryan.
I'm Ryan Sargent.
Sean Wheatley.
Jeremy Dan.
Joe Fellow.
Matt Lytle.
Sean Sisson.
Okay, so that's the motley crew we have here organized to get going. And we're just going to, we have a couple topics we figured we'd talk about, and we'll just see where the conversation goes. I guess the best thing, we'll start, before we get to the DC stuff that I know everybody's itching to talk about, but I'm not, is Fear Itself and Flashpoint are the big events that DC has going on this summer. And issues 3 of Fear Itself and Flashpoint 2 came out today, but since nobody except probably me has read them, we're just going to talk about our general impressions with how the series are going and what we feel about some of the tie-ins that have come out so far. So, anybody want to jump in on that?
All right, I'll jump in. This is the first Sean. Which one do you want to start with, Fear Itself?
Yeah, we'll start with Fear Itself. That's one we're 2 issues deep, not including the one that came out today.
I've actually really been liking the series, and typically I do buy the Marvel events every year, so I should probably preface it by saying that. That doesn't mean I always enjoy them. I kind of like World War Hulk left me a little wanting.
You didn't like the ending?
Well, it didn't feel like there was much of a world war, and there really wasn't much destruction left at the end, considering it was the Hulk.
And they pointed out that no one was killed or injured? Yeah. I like the slap fight at the end as well.
My only complaint, I guess, with the Fear Itself stuff is they've had a number of these kind of tie-in or one-shots that contain reprinted material, and to date I picked those up as well, but I found that material not to be really that helpful. So reading some obscure Captain America where they introduced the Red Skull's daughter, and but nothing really happened in the story, so it didn't really tell me anything about the character other than, oh, the Red Skull had a daughter that was depicted in a comic book in the 70s.
Okay.
So I don't know if that, you know, is, you know, if you're going to reprint stuff from the past, at least have some sort of tie-in or connect it to what's going on now. I really like the Herc book.
Okay, haven't read that one yet.
Well,
I've heard really good things about it.
Last week, I haven't read the series, and I didn't read Thor or any of that stuff, but I thought the book read really well. Not knowing anything about it, I felt like they gave me enough information. Like, I got dropped in the middle, and I was fine. I was able to hang on and figure out what was going on. And there was actually more than just the mention of Fear Itself, which is the other thing I hate about tie-ins. If it's only, like, one box or one panel, don't waste my time.
Right. That's how I felt about the Iron Man one.
Well, the Death of Spider-Man, they did that too. They had the, you know, they had a crossover to an issue with new X Ultimate Avengers
right.
against the new Ultimate.
Ultimate Edition. Avengers versus the new Ultimates, yes.
And anyways, the only there was one panel in the book that was exactly the same panel
right.
you got the week before in the Spider-Man book, but just showing you Spider-Man getting shot from a different angle.
Okay. Well, actually, I think those came out the same day.
Yeah. Did they come
yeah.
out the same day?
Well, most recent issues, there's more.
Yeah.
Dealing with Spider-Man and the new...
But that new Ultimates, new Avengers, had nothing until you got all the way to the end.
This one does, though.
And I was just totally confused. But the one thing, I guess, for Fear Itself is I picked up from another podcast. Did we mention them? Or,
yeah, that's fine.
Comic
no, I'm
Geek
not...
Speak,
yeah.
so Jamie,
no, this is exclusive.
So Jamie D, because initially when I first read the first two, the prelude and then the book, I was kind of like, I don't know what's going on. And then Jamie D supposed that perhaps there was more than one All-Father, and some bad stuff went down between them, and we only know Odin under that name, but there might be another one, and now he's back and he's pissed. And that was really all I needed, and I was like, whether it's true or not, it was close enough that it fits with what the story's going, and it's helping me enjoy the book a lot more. And if it turns out that that's actually where the story is, and probably you guys can tell me.
Well, we don't know.
Were there other All-Fathers?
Just not to give anything away. No, not to give anything away from number 3, but even through issue 3, this character appeared in the first issue, and that's been it. He's the big bad. Odin's afraid of him. We don't know why. We don't know who he is. It's just a generic big bad guy.
In one of the first two issues, somebody refers to him as the original All-Father.
Right, that's what I was...
Yeah. Sin or maybe.
But they haven't developed that at all. And this last issue was just here we go. I'm not going to talk about issue three, but I'm talking about issue three, is, and the same thing happened in the recent Secret Avengers, where Washington's being waylaid by these 70-year-old Nazi robots with Gatling guns. I just don't understand how Ms. Marvel can't fly in and take care of this whole situation. And instead, the heroes that are fighting is Bucky, Falcon, and Black Widow. Three people who were not designed to take on an army of robots.
But didn't the statues come alive to help them?
That was in Secret Avengers.
That was crazy.
That was crazy, but I didn't like that issue just because it seemed, you know, when they're quoting the Gettysburg Address at the end, and it just seemed a little heavy-handed. Yeah. And it was a B story. It wasn't, you know, okay, they had Ant-Man doing something goofy, but I want more out of my Secret Avengers.
But it was
that.
Like War Machine and Ant-Man in the beginning, and then it was like, okay, now it's a B story and a pro-mutant senator who was a mutant all along.
Right, which, really, how could he be in, you know, that's like ignoring House of M and everything. But whatever, I just didn't care for that tie-in. And
I guess I was just so happy to see Abe Lincoln get up and start.
Well, yeah, that was cool, but then they left it alone and no one reacted. You didn't have Ant-Man going, holy cow, Abraham Lincoln, and he was just like, oh. You know, and went on.
Marvel
so,
Man, the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Is it only statues of people, or was the Washington Monument out there poking robots?
I don't. I think it was just Abe Lincoln. And,
but you think Abe Lincoln, a marble statue, could have taken out a 70-year-old robot? You know, so.
Well, maybe he can help out over in Paris.
Oh, yes. Now, that's a very good point. Now, that was actually. Now, the Iron Man, the second Iron Man tie-in was good. The first Iron Man tie-in was, you know, a classic old. Red Sky tie-in, like back in the days of Crisis.
I remember the first time.
It wasn't. At the very end, you saw a hammer flying through the sky, and everybody going, ooh. And that was the only tie-in to Fear Itself.
Tony and Pepper talking outside the hotel where the two scientists got beat up, and you just saw one panel with a hammer flying through the sky.
And that was hammer time.
Yeah. So, I it seems like just another standard Marvel event where it's a very slow build-up, two, and then a very quick finish. Like, you're going to get into issue six and not know how they're going to wrap this up, and then, like, Siege, at the end of issue three, you're like, how are they going to wrap this up? And then issue three felt like it got stretched out because it was wrapped up in a page, and then there was just a lot of, oh, well, now we better stand around. Oh, look, Norman's running away. You know, full stag, go bonk him on the head.
Part of the fun's getting there, though, you know, and seeing all of the character transformations, you know, seeing the different characters get a hammer, get powered up, and then fight everybody.
But when nobody, like I said, again, if none of these characters can beat a 70-year-old robot, how can they possibly beat these people with hammers? They've set them up to be so powerful.
Maybe the robots are powered by the new All-Father. Maybe he's imbuing them with special juice.
Maybe they should tell us that, you know, or, I mean, it's possible I missed it, but...
It's performance art.
Oh, okay.
Interpretation.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, tell me I've read way too much Claremont X-Men, but I read the first issue of Fear Itself. I had no problem with the story, no problem with where it's going, but that first issue, if they had done this right, could have been scattered through every Marvel title over the last year mm-hmm. and a half with one-page teasers, because... Yeah. It's like if you're reading all the Marvel titles, the one thing that Fear Itself struck me as is how abrupt it started. And I know a lot of the previous events have started the same way. They don't even worry about a build-up anymore. It's like all of a sudden there's fear and unrest everywhere in your eye. And I read Iron Man, I read Thor, I read Cap, I read Avengers, and I was still a little kind of jolted when this is supposed to be the big summer tentpole.
Yeah, he could have even put it in, you know, he's writing Iron Man and he's writing Thor. He could have fed those in, but his Thor story had nothing to do with this.
If you had done a slow build like that, where it's like, you know, there's this, you know, big bad that's off in the distance, you know, kind of like Simonson did with Thor, that first arc of Thor, you know, you build that and build that. Then he could have hit the ground running, make issue two number one, and then you're already in the action, and it gives you enough time to get the big... Because all we want out of the event is the big battle.
Yeah. And this kind of leads into the next topic. I don't want to get there yet, but you look at something like Blackest Night, that was 2 years of build-up. And, you know, it just fed and fed, and, you know, that really worked. You had the build-up.
I thought it was too much build-up. I mean,
it may have been too much build-up, but a lot of stuff that I get from Marvel is they sit down, they have a meeting, and what if there's another Odin? Great, run with it. Okay, and you guys sprinkle that throughout your stories and tie in somehow. And it seems like they're, you know, they don't have these big plans that started a year ago that they're thinking about.
I'll say the best tie-in, though, is Journey into Mystery.
Okay.
I think that's the best new book recently. It's the Thor book to read, if you ask me.
I did read The Mighty Thor, and I thought they were good. So.
The one with Chris Samnee. And,
yeah.
No, but I don't mind, you know, at this point, I'm so tired of the decompression. I was joking about it last week. I call it like retardation now.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, I'm so tired of picking up these trades of the first six issues, and you're still nowhere. We're not going. I was complaining about Morning Glory, and I know everybody's like, rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, really? I'm like, really?
You mean like the Red Hulk?
Well,
2 years in, and you still don't know.
It was 24 issues. I don't know. It was more than 2 years because it was late.
So you're right. That was a totally abrupt start, but it also kind of reminded me of when I was a kid and I would miss issues. So you would have to just, okay, so I missed the last two issues of Spider-Man. I don't know, but I got this one,
right.
So I'm just gonna go. And I'm so. It feels like I don't get any. You don't get any of that anymore. Where you get the ride, we have to do the full exposition, and it has to be sprinkled out through this, and we have to retcon this and this. Now you're ready for the story.
That's what I'm liking about a lot of DC stuff. Green Lantern's been going on and on, but the Detective keeps doing little three issue story arcs.
Love it,
and it's been great, and response has been great, and I hope they keep going with that. That kind of short story arc where, you know, it can be part of a bigger story like X-Men used to be.
It was
a huge long story, but you got your little
narrative in the 80s, like mostly X-Men, but it was a lot of other books where you have one page that has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the comic. That's your Hammer, you know, mysteriously showing up, and you're like, oh my god, what's this Hammer? And then they don't mention it again, and then it shows up a few issues later when they're ready to start the story, and, you know, you start the story, you give the reader enough background, but for those of us who have been along for the ride, it's like, oh, cool. This
almost
is
like Easter eggs.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they did that. Like, was that like what they did with Doomsday before the whole death of Superman?
In one panel, you just saw
the rocket, right?
Yeah.
And then it was getting closer to Earth. And then in another book, it was coming through the atmosphere, and they did that on and on and on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until he landed and was breaking out of the cocoon up to, was that Justice League like 69 or something? Or 29?
Somewhere around there.
I even remember Infinity Gauntlet. Like they were.
Oh, yeah, talk about decompression. Holy jeez.
What kind of ends up happening in today's, is with today's massive storylines only lasting seven issues, you know, we'll get a year's worth of actual time with this new status quo, but only 12 issues will have passed, so it won't be that much story.
Right. I think stuff like that, you know, you read it over the issues as it comes out every month, and it feels, because you're anticipating it every month and you're waiting for that issue to come out, and it feels like it's longer. You have longer to go over the story in your mind, and then, you know, sometimes I go back and read a collected edition or pull out 12 issues of a story, and I read it in, I don't know, a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh, no, it's done now.
Oftentimes they'll fill in the blanks with all of the tie-in miniseries and all the one-shots, so, you know, it'll be a year's worth of actual time, and then there will be a ton of issues that have come out, but, you know, still, this, you know, the story, like, I feel they could expand on it a little bit more, you know, compress it a little bit, tell more story,
mm-hmm.
advance the story a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, you could take the first issue of this book, spread it out in other titles,
mm-hmm.
build up to it, and then when you get to your tentpole event, you get all that action, you don't have to worry about, you know, the decompression, because all these writers love to do those character moments that, you know, everybody loves to write the beginning, and then it's like, oh, yeah, we got to have the big fight and action. And
yeah, we have these beats we have to hit, and we're just getting there. And a lot of books feel that way. Like, I want to say at least Avengers and Secret Avengers, maybe even Iron Man, recap the big speech in issue one. And it's like, okay, I've already seen this. I don't want to see it again. And it's just, it feels like it's taking up time and space in that book. Give me more. Give me new. That's why, you know, I already read this. So. Okay.
I got the editor box as seen.
Oh, my God. You know,
I was in issue 42.
It was a Wizard World in Philly early 2000s, when they were still good.
Oh.
But somebody asked a Marvel editor about that, and they said, well, they don't want to do it because it pulls you out of the story. And I remember sitting there thinking, well, first of all, no, it doesn't.
That's how I figure stuff out as a kid.
Exactly.
That builds your fan base.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But as a kid, that made me want to go find that book. And I would dig through the back issue bins because, you know, as seen in, you know, Avengers Annual number 8, well, that's got to be a fascinating story. And I look at it nowadays as, how about, as seen in Thor End of Worlds,
trade.
On sale now, you know, at your local store. You know, it could help us, it could help move their trades, but they're just stubborn. There's, no, it's not good. But then every once in a while you see it in a Spider-Man specifically.
But having a two-page Slurpee ad in the middle.
Yeah, of a fight. Yeah, you turn the page and you don't, or I love the Dan Slott ad that they have now where you have the text page, you turn the page, and there's another text page. It's like, okay, you know, that.
I mean, love him or hate him, that was one thing Jim Shooter was so good at. It's like, it's snowing in Spider-Man. Why is it snowing in Spider-Man? Go read Thor.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, you know, I should go read Thor. And then you have no interest in Thor, and all of a sudden you're like 6 issues into it or something like that.
Yeah, I'd love to see that come back. Okay, now let's move on. Flashpoint. What? Basically, we're just talking about the first issue of Flashpoint, but what does everybody feel?
I thought the introduction to Flashpoint was drug out through the Flash book way too long. That story was very boring. Yeah. Until the very end, like, it was like, why am I reading the Flash? Like, I'm going to drop the Flash. Well, it's going to lead into Flashpoint. I better stick it out. Like, I just felt like I was reading it because I had to understand the event. And then we have the event, which could have been told in one issue and not 4 or 5.
Okay.
That's how it is in my case. I was thinking about dropping it for a while. But I read John's earlier Flash run from 2000-2005, and I really liked it. And he did I think you mentioned how some people, you know, you layer the story through your issues as you go through, and then when you get to the big event, it's just the event, you know, it's the action like we've been talking about. And that's what he used to do in his old Flash run, so that's what I expected now, and that is totally not what he's doing anymore. He sort of dragged this idea of Barry Allen being conflicted, you know, instead of being this happy-go-lucky guy that we had in the Silver Age, he's this guy who can't get over the death of his parents, and he's very depressed all the time, and it's really dragging down his family life, but that's all we get for 12 issues. You know, we get some action here and there every now and then, but it wasn't exciting. I felt like it wasn't exciting anymore. It wasn't the Flash. It was the Flash going kind of slow.
It was emo Flash.
Yeah.
Well, you know what John said? He wrote Wally West so good that I don't care about Barry Allen.
See, yeah, I agree. I feel the same.
One thing I read probably on Comic Book Resources was talking about how he was saying Flashpoint is a story of loss. And I'm like, well, one, that's not what I want to read. But they said Flash is a character of loss because his mother died. I'm like, well, that was kind of made up. That's not how Flash was. And then it was, like he said, look at Cyborg. He's all loss. And Batman is loss because he lost his family, and that's going to be a theme going through this. I'm like, okay. And I guess just the variant, they didn't really talk about it, but the variant cover of Flashpoint 2 shows Aquaman's loss. And so I don't know. We'll see where this goes. But
didn't Captain America take us through the 7 stages of
Yes, yes. And Jeff Loeb did. But just generally, just going around, what did everybody think of Flashpoint 1? Is it something that intrigued you, made you want to read it, or just something that you read and you went pass?
I loved it.
I liked a lot of the smaller ideas that were in it. I liked a lot of John's revisions of the characters, what he did with Shazam. I thought was really interesting. I'd like to see more of that.
You probably will.
Yeah. What was it? What did he do?
He basically, instead of having Shazam just be Billy Batson that says the magic word Shazam, it's like 7 kids, and each kid has one of the powers that Shazam has.
But I think they keep that power.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away, and then they combine to become.
So, like, when he's a kid, he has the speed of Hermes. But kind of. Like Voltron.
Yeah. And Battle Cat. I love Talkie Tawny. That was awesome.
But yeah, it's like Captain Planet. Like, the one kid had a big tiger on a chain, and they're all deciding whether or not they should go off to war with Batman and Cyborg. And they're like, well, let's ask Captain Thunder, because he's Captain Thunder now, apparently, instead of Captain Marvel. And they all say Shazam, and then they all kind of form into one person, and the tiger has all this like battle armor on, and it's...
But tell me you don't see Shazam with scars across his face for the whole ride.
Oh, yeah, as soon as that happened, and he wasn't like happy Captain Marvel, you know, the big red smiling cheese. It was like, Wonder Woman left her mark on me, let's go make one on her.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, let's go.
Exactly. And then you have the other one that kind of caught me was Shade the Changing Man. Yeah. With the Secret 7 and just kind of disembodied voices, and what's up with that? So that's definitely a book, and I like Milligan. I loved Ecstatics and X-Force. The other thing was the end of the book with Batman. That made me just... Batman miniseries couldn't come fast enough. This was a story I had to read, especially knowing Azzarello was writing it. I'm just like, this is going to be good. And that definitely continues in issue two, just to give you a treat.
I wasn't going to read it.
Oh, I know. You said you didn't want anything to do with it.
I wanted nothing to do with it. And
I was right there with you.
You kind of talked me into buying the first issue, and
I was
hooked as soon as, you know, I saw Batman with red glowing eyes, and I was like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah. I don't always lead you wrong. Huh?
You know, I have to say, though, comparing the two events along those lines, I was so excited about Fear Itself because I love Matt Fraction. I thought the idea, what little they tease, I was like, oh, this is cool. And as much as I love DC, love the Flash book had killed, you know, what interest I had. Yeah. And then within 2 weeks, those positions have entirely reversed.
I love Fraction on Iron Man. I don't think I like Fraction on anything else. I don't like him on Thor. I didn't like The Order. He was okay on Punisher War Journal.
I have not liked Fraction since the early issues of Iron Man.
What?
I like the crazy Sharp stuff like Casanova.
Okay. God, I wish somebody would buy that.
It is such a weird book. I mean,
it is.
And I like weird stuff. But yeah.
There's not enough nudity for you. So.
Fraction's writing has become too much like Bendis's. Yes. Great first issue setup. 4 issues of people sitting around talking. 1 issue getting towards the end. Last issue wraps up like that.
That was like that whole Thor run where they spent like 3 issues in a diner talking about
quantum
physics or whatever. It was like, oh my god.
When you mentioned it, I was thinking the last Avengers issue where it was literally talking heads for the entire
that
issue.
That interview issue?
Except when they showed the scene again from the first issue of Flash.
Right, but
of
you
Fear
got
itself.
That those interviews were all from different times and different places.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we're supposed to believe that someone's been documenting the Avengers that long?
Yeah.
The
whole Wolverine Squirrel Girl thing, too, that's a little... They can take that home with them. That's unnerving.
You don't like Girls with Tails?
Okay. I didn't like Flashpoint until I read the Booster Gold issue.
Okay. So. And now, I know you'd like that issue. I love that issue as being... if you've never read Booster Gold, you could read that book. You know everything you need to know about him, his position, everything, and just jump right in. And
usually
I'm
not a fan of, like, you know, the sidekick robot,
right,
or, you know, the person in the headset,
right,
or the guy in the van telling the Punisher. I'm not a big fan.
Who is Jake Ellis?
Yes.
Okay.
That book is driving me crazy for just that reason. It's taking too long. Like, if you're going to use that as your premise, you need to tell me.
Well, it's over today.
No, one more.
I thought it was 4. One more.
At least one more, didn't it?
Yeah, I love Booster Gold in 52.
Yeah, that was the best part of 52.
Well,
I never read the series.
And it felt like I was right back. Like, even though I hadn't read 40 issues, I was like, oh, this is the Booster Gold I know. And
I had to check my notes, but I thought it had a better cliffhanger at the end of Booster Gold than it had at the end of Flashpoint.
No, that end of Flashpoint was what? That was a eye-opener, you know. You wanted to read the next issue immediately.
12-year-old me wished the internet hadn't
ruined it
so quickly because I felt the same way.
Okay.
Like, I read that issue, saw that, and was like, where's the next one?
See, that's the one cool thing about getting the books a day early is I don't read them to blow it, but I don't get anything spoiled anymore.
That felt to me too much like old DC. Like, here we go, we're on an Elseworld, it's going to be a different world. I'm like, and the whole premise of, here, we read the, everything you know is wrong. Okay, how many times have we been, has that been the platter on whichever story?
Okay, go ahead.
That's actually one of the reasons I have not been getting Flashpoint, is that type of thing, that exact ending to the first issue of Flashpoint. Because 3 years from now, DC will do another alternate reality thing, only in this one, Batman will be Joker's son or something. They always throw some Batman has to be somebody else, or
they haven't said who Joker is.
And it doesn't really matter what they do, because they retcon everything every couple years.
So that
has
cool.
You know, Batman as a Joker's son, I'd buy that book.
They killed Captain America, he's back 2 years later. Tony Stark lost his company. He's got his company back. You know,
exactly.
They do,
12-year-old me lives for this cliffhanger.
Or,
I could care less what the cliffhanger means.
Or here,
but months from now.
Here's my ultimate, though. War Machine. Jim Rhodes has turned into a cyborg. Oh, he switched his consciousness into a clone, and now he's fine. That's kind of the ultimate we can do whatever we want. As soon as I read that, I went, oh, it's our soap
operas, though. You have to, take that.
DC has the cosmic treadmill. Nothing will ever be more cheesy than the cosmic treadmill.
Sure, but I'm saying complaining about one company versus another, they both do it.
Yeah, they both have issues, major issues.
Right.
The thing with me is the Marvel characters, for the most part, don't get me wrong, there are some that don't fit this mold, but are more down to earth. Where all of the DC characters are bigger than life, and they're just not believable. They have no humanity.
Yeah, I mean,
sure, but that's just how both companies started. You got to look at DC characters starting in the 40s and 50s when they had to be bigger than life. They had, you know, they were taking on things from like radio shows, and that's where they were developed. Whereas, you know, most of the Marvel characters started in the 60s when it was just a much different world, and Stan made a conscious choice to make them more real. Whereas, you know, most of the, you know, Superman, you can't suddenly try to make more real with more problems. They've tried, they made him married, and it doesn't
Jeff
feel
Johns
right.
That.
Well, whatever. But I'm just saying it's just two different things. So you can like one and not the other. I don't think one's right or one's wrong.
No, it's not a matter of right or wrong. It's just that's my opinion. Why I tend towards Marvel over DC.
Okay,
it is a philosophical difference.
Yeah,
between
I
the
want
companies.
My heroes grounded to at least be somewhat believable in the real world.
Oh yeah, I mean every science nerd has always dreamed of building his armor, right?
God. Well, hang on. Right.
What's the difference?
Changing topics. I believe quoting from Dan DiDio, where is it? Oh, they don't have the... we want to inject a new life in our characters in line. So a chance to start at the beginning and at a point where our characters are younger and stories are being told for today's audience. But I know they said they wanted to make it more grounded.
More grounded
and real.
Based in realism.
I read a thing online today where Jim Lee was talking about it and said that he wanted... that one of the whole purposes of the whole relaunch was to give their characters more humanity.
Man, son, was Dan DiDio consulting with you?
I mean, so what do you guys think of Green Lantern's gun in that picture?
Where's his ring?
It's a Gatling gun.
Well, if you see where the gun's coming from.
Oh, relax.
You can construct anything. Why an old-school Gatling gun?
I think because that's how Lee drew the picture.
Because he's human. Haven't you seen the previews for the movie?
but I think that's part of the thing. It seems they're going to do it now. We know so little. I mean, I haven't read the article yet because I didn't know they still published USA Today. But
so we can only do constructs of things that actually exist now?
I don't know. Big boxing gloves. Bring back the boxing gloves.
Green Arrow's got them on the end of the
show. Oh, good point.
Does Jim Lee think fashion stopped in the 80s?
Like, collars
like,
up, bitches.
The high-up collar, like, you know, like...
They've all got their collar up. Everybody. Even Wonder Woman, they put a choker on it.
I would have liked to say it's kind of funny.
They redesigned the characters.
I know, because the Wonder Woman redesign was such a hit. Let's let him redesign every character in the DC.
First thing when I looked at this picture, first thing I thought of was Heroes Reborn.
Yeah, that's a lot of people drawing.
I'm just really happy to see for that to be the Justice League, though.
Yeah.
Justice League's what, going to be 18 characters?
It said 18 main characters.
That's fine, as long as we can get Superman, Batman, well, not even Batman, but Superman, Green Lantern, Flash, Wonder Woman, you know, get back, you know, I don't want Kongorilla and Vixen and Dr. Light. That's not my Justice League. So if we can get back to a major book, this is one thing I've been saying for years, is each company has two main books that everybody who buys their book should buy. And for Marvel, it's Avengers. If you're reading any of their books, you should want the Avengers, because that should be the core book that everything else spins off of. And for DC, it should be Justice League. You should want to read the story of all these great characters together. But neither book... I mean, Avengers does well. Justice League has not been good for a long time.
Well, it's been irrelevant since Brad Meltzer left, which was issue 12, and we're at 46?
No, we're in the 50s, late 50s. But those should be the two books people are talking about. But they're not.
So does the reboot undo Batman Inc.?
I don't know.
This is
we don't know.
Because I read there's a Nightwing. Nightwing and Batgirl will be two of the new titles with Barbara Gordon as Batgirl.
Okay. So that doesn't affect Batman.
Well, if there's
Inc.
a Nightwing, that means Dick isn't Batman anymore.
Okay.
But that still doesn't mean
that doesn't affect Batman Inc.
I hate Batman Inc. I wish it'd go away.
Oh,
I hate Morrison on Batman, so I wish that whole thing would go away.
But overall, like I was reading all the Bleeding Cool stuff today just to get up to speed because yesterday was a bad day for me. I'll get into that. But like I saw, we got a Grant Morrison Superman. That sounds great.
All of my money.
We got we got James Robinson Hawkman. That sounds great.
I'm not a Robinson fan.
Well, I want to see Robinson write one character as opposed to writing a team.
Yes.
But just overall, you know, I like the idea of Barbara Gordon as Batgirl.
I do too. I love it.
You know, granted, it does seem like Johns is trying to undo everything Alan Moore ever did, but so be it. You know, let's do that. Let's get a Nightwing book back because two Batman doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
To be fair to Johns, they've been undoing the back injury to Barbara and Birds of Prey since it relaunched with her going through physical therapy and stuff. So it's not like it's out of the blue.
Maybe I have missed some stuff today. But I didn't hear anything about the Batgirl or any of that. I heard it was all proposed, but not...
Well, there's been nothing official. Yeah. Nothing official has been announced.
The only official is Justice League with Johns and Lee.
Solicits won't be until, like, the 11th. The
13th, 11th, 12th, 13th.
Yeah, whenever they come out.
So who wants to bet on how long Lee's run lasts on Justice League?
Supposedly he's been working on it for a while because they've had this in the works. So
six issues.
Hopefully more because they know how much they have invested in it. I bet it'll go more than
that.
That
guy hasn't delivered an on-time book.
That's kind of cool. It made the cover of USA Today.
The 90s, maybe?
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
He hasn't had to, either. I mean, once he left for Image, he's been writing his own ticket, and he's been pretty much able to do what he wanted.
But here's the other thing. One other thing they proposed, just to mention Jim Lee, is it looks like they're going to relaunch a bunch of the Wildstorm books.
Yep.
We're talking about, I saw Grifter, Wildcats, and Gen 13. Now, I opened... right as the big World Storm relaunch was taking place, and that was a complete disaster. So I have no investment or interest in the characters other than I really like the Authority. I like the original Ellis Authority and even further into the Millar or Miller. But so if they could do that well,
are they going to bring that? Is that going to be part of the DCU or is it
yes.
going to... So Gen 13 might team up with Wonder Woman.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
But I'm excited, you know, and... I just keep looking at all this going, they have to have a big plan. They're not just going to half-ass this whole thing because they'll fall on their face.
I mean,
so.
They're doing some crazy stuff like Lois Lane and Superman not being together. Yep. I mean, that's the big rumor I've heard right now.
Well,
Superman
my gosh, would that be like Mary Jane and Peter Parker not being together?
Yeah, but at least we had the devil. At least we had the devil.
One more day.
They're setting Batman to be Captain America and Superman to be Spider-Man.
Oh, my God.
And he's going to date Wonder Woman?
I know they're making the character somewhat younger and stuff.
Okay.
But they're not really... They really haven't talked about it being a reboot, just relaunching the series. Well,
they're saying revamp.
Yeah, they're saying they're revamped.
Yeah,
it's not going to... They said they're going to keep continuity. Yeah.
Yeah.
It says they're keeping continuity where it's important, but they are going to make changes to some characters' origins.
Yeah, some of the characters are no longer...
It's going to be the white light.
Yeah, they're going to change the ethnicity of some characters and stuff like that. But they could keep some of the history of some of the
characters. Sure, and I don't think they're going to... They're not throwing everything away.
Yeah.
No,
Superman's still going to be the last son of Krypton.
Yeah, they're not completely revamping and all of a sudden it's going to be a Hispanic Superman, you know, who comes from the
Wonder
barrio.
Wonder Woman's a transvestite.
You know, there you go. Well, Matt would like that, but...
There's a new issue for you, Matt.
Have you seen The Hangover 2 yet?
Yes, I have.
Matt hasn't. Okay. Sorry.
I don't get it, babies.
But... Just there's a lot. I'm reading people screaming about everything. Let's let it happen. Let's see what happens. My problem with it was the announcement of the same day digital release. That's been something that's been hanging over us as retailers' heads for a long time. Where, if nothing else, we could get you the books first. You could get it digitally if you waited, but we had the books first. But the idea of same day digital release is just a scary. Prospect for us where you know now instead of you coming in to get your books you can have them delivered to you at 6 a.m. and you can read them over breakfast, and then the aspect of people talking about lower prices that I can't compete with. DC sets the price of their books. If they then offer them the same product directly to you at less money, that's a problem for me.
So do you really think, and you can slap me if you think this is a hard question, but So are they customers now?
I don't know.
See, and that's where I'd say is like these people aren't coming in. We were talking about this before we started recording, which was like first of all, like, the self-realization that the group that's sitting here around the table today is a small minority within the hobby or the fandom, sure, or however you want to wrap that up. So, you know, potentially, I mean, do we represent enough dollars to DC to make that a going proposition? So them going digital, does that affect how much I will spend? Probably not a whole lot, because I have the habit of coming to the shop, regardless of what city I'm in, a new comic book day, and picking up my books and holding them, because I'm of that age group and I've been in the hobby that long. So for me, one of the things I do with my daughter is teach her the habit, because and Matt, you've seen my 2.5-year-old fly around. She's already on the iPad. She can already
sure
play games, watch videos. She loves the All-Star Superman DVD right now. It's one of her favorites. But I make sure that every Friday we go to the Isotope together as part of our time. So I question whether or not that's really going to have an impact on the sales. And since you're really not getting new customers in when a new movie comes out,
right,
or when a video game tie-in comes out, and that's kind of been demonstrated over time now. Is that accurate? I'm not a retailer,
so I don't know.
I don't want to speak.
No,
like
we get
I
a little more interest really from the customers that we have.
Right.
Saying, oh, look, I have a whole wall of Thor books. You know, I kind of like the movie. I'll try this. But just as an example, I gave out 200 copies of the Thor Captain America Free Comic Day book at the local theaters. In each one, I put a coupon saying, bring this coupon in for 25% off your next purchase. Figuring that'll get somebody in just to give something a try. I haven't had one come back in. So I don't know if that, you know, maybe it didn't get to the right people, but, you know, I can't afford to put more of those out there. You know, I'm going to...
And hasn't kind of the hobby and even the industry, if we're calling it that, shrunk down enough post-speculator boom and all that and down economic times and everything? I would imagine eventually we got to level out somewhere, because the hobby's not going to go away. There are enough people that have disposable income. There are woefully few, but newer. I mean, mm-hmm, just graduated college, so I'm like, all right, so you started reading books after I'd already been reading them for 15 years. So, you know, but it's not, you know, it's going to take guys like us to even keep that. So I think of almost like record stores, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even though iTunes sells more copies of music right now, there still is... I mean, most record companies are doing vinyl. They're nice editions. They haven't totally given up on that. And there's people that buy them, and there's still record stores you can go to. So I think that was the point I was making on your page today. That, you know, as a retailer, it's not the comics that are making people come here. I mean, obviously, you just put a thing up, hey, I'm going to try a podcast, and look how many people showed up here tonight.
Right.
So, you know, there's that sense of community, too. So for you, I don't see digital as being a huge threat.
But it when I looked at it, there was a couple things that's, because I said, okay, look at the music business. As far as retail CDs,
mm-hmm,
is crushed.
Absolutely.
Retail books crushed. Magazines, newspapers, video store rentals, you know, all gone basically now because of digital, because you can download it.
Well, the chains, the stores that push a lot of the smaller ones out. The guys that are still around doing it, and you know, you were in San Francisco with me, they're small. I mean, we have a magazine shop in my neighborhood. Now, would that concept work anywhere else? Absolutely not. But that particular retailer figured out a way to understand what his customers wanted in that particular area and provide it to them. Just the same as you do here. You know?
Right.
So,
but then the other thing that scared me was, not only do you had a complete relaunch. So that's going to cost me customers. The guy who's been getting Superman since he was 8 is all of a sudden going to have a natural break. Because I know what happened with me. When they ended Daredevil at 380, those last 2 years were horrible. And when it ended, I went, great. They relaunched. I said, I don't have to get this new number one. I'm out. Of course, then when they renumbered it, I ended up having to get them all again. But that's a different story.
But you bought another book.
Probably.
And
probably,
if you guys drop a title, do you pick up another book?
Usually.
Right.
Seriously, because I see these on the board. Oh, I'm dropping that book.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, Joe Blow,
yeah,
but you're going to buy another one too.
Yeah.
So,
but my fear is, so you have, this is a big natural break, but it's a natural break for everything DC. And I'm not saying everybody's going to drop everything, but all of a sudden the guy who was getting Superman isn't. But then you also have, you know, what if, and another guy decides to start it up as a digital. So now I've lost those two customers. Am I going to gain two more to replace them on that book?
But if they do it right, if they do it well,
right,
you'll come back and you'll buy those 12 issues that you missed. And Sean's making the point that in the meantime, you're probably going to be buying something else.
Right.
But I think what's really happening here is DC is identifying that they're second to Marvel. They're admitting they're second to Marvel.
Absolutely.
And they're admitting that a lot of people who may have read comics in the 90s have a perception of DC as second to Marvel. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you know, they have a perception of DC's characters as these shining beacons of hope as opposed to Marvel's real-world grounded characters. And what DC is doing here is they're making an effort to shift that perception and say, look, our characters are cool. We're getting the number one guy in the biz to redesign every single one of our characters. We're getting top writers to tell a whole different story than you've seen before. You know, so come check us out. And, you know, we're going to be here coming into the comic shops no matter what. So 12 issues later, we can, you know, kind of change our initial judgment if we want to. But I think they're really making a push for people that aren't reading comics now. They're making a push for a brand new type of customer because they're, you know, they're seeing that, you know, maybe the future doesn't lie in the customers that they have now, that there aren't enough new customers coming on. You
sure.
know, they have yeah. us. They have us already, and if it's good, they'll retain us.
And there's going to be a certain amount of money that goes to that segment of the business forever because that's where the original content comes from. That's where the trademarks are protected because they're continually being published in magazines, right? That's what you.
Mm-hmm.
These are things you do to keep your trademark
yeah.
and your copyrights, correct? And especially for digital, it's also subsidizing the content creation. Now, I thought I read somewhere, but again, it's never been confirmed, that DC may or may not be doing new deals with some of the creators to compensate for the digital format
okay.
differently than so potentially. There's an opportunity for creators to make more money there too, which again for us is an opportunity to look at more comics and more cool pictures and sequential art. And we're always going to find something wrong with something.
Yeah.
And
the internet's going to find something wrong with something.
But, you know, building off what you were saying, I think it's just, you know, we were talking earlier, I think it's just a straight up business decision.
So, oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
They have four different pieces of the business, right? I mean, they got the print business, you got the movies and DVDs, you've got TV, and then digital. So with print trending down, eventually it'll level off, but it's kind of the key gatekeeper. That's what I'm saying. There's always going to be a certain amount of money that goes into that, and no matter what, maybe it won't be 50,000 issues or 80,000 a month, but there will still be a Superman and a Spider-Man book to come out for us guys. I don't doubt that. But then if DC's saying, well, where are we going to put our money? Well, future growth, the movies represent hundreds of millions of dollars. The print business is millions of dollars. TV is tens of millions of dollars. And digital right now is, do we know? But potentially, it shouldn't, at least on paper, it doesn't look like it would take digital that long to catch up to print at least, because print is subsidizing a lot of the creation
mm-hmm.
costs. So if you're going to sink your money there, and that's a new audience. So again, it's trending up. So if I'm going to be putting money in any part of that business, I'm going to make sure we take care of the movies. Hundreds of millions of dollars there. That's a big ticket item. TV, cartoons and stuff, again, keeps the characters out there, gets them name recognition with the kids, right? And the kids are the ones that are going to go digital.
Mm-hmm.
And then as long as they keep some collected editions and keep our floppies coming out, because our numbers are dwindling anyway, so we're going to complain no matter what's going
yeah.
on, to some respect. I don't know. That's how I sliced it up.
Joe, you talked about how, you know, DC is admitting that they need to find new readers. They need to find more people who might want to try reading comic books but aren't in that field yet. What I'm wondering is, I think it was in the USA Today article or maybe their official blog, either Jim Lee or Dan DiDio mentioned that they're having this big, you know, marketing campaign. You know, they're going to do stuff with USA Today and they're trying all these new outlets to advertise comic books to people. But even though there is the advertising aspect, like you mentioned, they have the cartoons and the movies and things to get people drawn in. I'm wondering
if that's where they make their money.
Well, yeah,
too.
That's where they make their money too. But I'm wondering, are they going to try putting comic books places where people aren't used to seeing them? I mean, when I was, I mean, granted, I'm only 22 years old, but
when I was a kid,
I was gonna say, yeah, leading up to that old man statement,
yeah.
when I was a kid, you know, I could walk into, you know, Giant Eagle and there would be comics in
mm-hmm.
Giant Eagle. In my lifetime, that stopped happening.
Yep.
I worked at a Borders when I started college and we had comic books, but we got like five or six new issues of like five or six new series every other month or something. It was not a regular thing, and kids didn't immediately go for the comic books because they were tucked away in the back of the store because they don't really sell, so, you know, we'll just order a few of them and then put them somewhere where nobody will find them, and we'll just tear them up and recycle them later. So I'm wondering if they're going to try to put something out places. Like, I've seen in Toys R Us, occasionally they'll have an issue or two at Toys R Us next to, the Batman toys. There'll be some Batman comics or something. But I think if they really want to get more new people reading comic books, they're going to have to put that somewhere. Or even with the digital stuff, like, they say, oh, you can read digital comics. It's in USA Today. You know, someone's parent is going to be like, oh, you can read comics online, kiddo. But is the kid really going to ask their parent's self and go online and download some comics?
Well,
you know,
I hear what you're saying, but are you projecting that onto the print side?
Because
I don't think that's their play at all. I think they're fine with the way the print business is. Obviously, they wouldn't be taking some of these risks.
That's true. They see the real upside as
keeping those characters mm-hmm. vital in the next generation's mind mm-hmm. so they can make money off the movies and TV. And if they can grow digital, that's even better because they control the distribution channel. Now, yeah. Colin is probably sitting over there going, oh, my. But, maybe we have yet to see, is it going to cannibalize
right. That's my fear, because just for me, you know, how do I put this nicely? We're not rolling in the money. We have really slim margins. And if I lose 10% of my business to digital, I'll probably close. So my fear is, you know, they're looking, oh, if we lose a little bit, well, that's not good. But the problem is, I mean, it was funny. Bleeding Cool just ran stories about two stores that are closing.
Yeah, I saw this
yesterday. So it was just like very interesting. You know, you have that, and then you announce, yeah, we're going to funnel all of our efforts into digital. And my concern, I'm going, well, gosh, you know, they can probably afford to lose my comic business. Can they afford to lose my graphic novel business, my DC Direct business? And not just me. Let's say you wipe out half the comic stores. And if your business model for graphic novels is solely Amazon, because Borders is gone and Barnes & Noble looks like it's going to be bought for a nook, I think that might be a bigger hit than they're foreseeing. Digital's great, but and I understand that's where the new kids want to go and everything, but sadly, I have a lot of money invested in print.
With a store as nice as this, though, it's not going to go under. You know, people come in here for more...